At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Installed by independent contractors. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Donna Adelson, the trial is about to start. Jury selection is getting underway, and we're going to see quite a show. And we're bringing you the trial every single day right here at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. So be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of that. And of course, our commentary, our breaking down of the case. We're going to be doing a lot of that in the coming weeks. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, going to be joining us for much of that. Eric, well, before even opening statements have begun, let's start by focusing on Donna Adelson's defense strategy here, especially the startling possibility that she might take the stand in her own defense. It's been reported that Donna, 73-year-old matriarch, now facing charges of first-degree murder, conspiracy, and solicitation, is very strongly considering testifying at trial. It's an unusual and risky move. Few defendants in major murder cases choose to testify since it opens them up to brutal cross-examinations. Yet, Donna, she appears willing to roll the dice, perhaps believing she can charm or out-talk the jury and regain control of the narrative. What the hell do you make? I want to start with this, and then we'll go into the greater legal scheme of what they're planning here. Even before a word has been said, she's talking about taking the stand. This is usually a last-ditch maneuver, isn't it?
Totally is. It's uncommon from defense to kind of show their hand pre-trial, because what it does is it allows the prosecutor to prepare for the likelihood that the defense is going to testify, to get sort of an ironclad cross-examination ready to go. Got your exhibits queued up. You got your jail calls ready to impeach this person. And so I don't know if it's a bluff, but I just don't see much benefit to tipping off the other side as to what you might do in terms of a real big move in your defense case in chief.
Obviously, this is all speculation. She's innocent until proven guilty. Everything's alleged. What the hell do you think her defense attorney is saying? She's gone through a few of them now. Obviously, that's been an issue. That's been part of the thing, delaying the trial multiple times. The hell's going on there? How do you think those conversations are going?
I think it's peculiar that there was this kind of a public disclosure that she might testify. And if I was her attorney, I don't play it that way. I play things close to the vest because defense is allowed to do that. And I'm not going to give you any kind of notice except for what's legally required in terms of what I'm going to come at you with. And so, yeah, the fact that they've done that is kind of strange. I wonder if it was at Donna's behest to be so public about this, because it would seem counterintuitive for an attorney to want to publicly disclose this huge move. And can't help but wonder if there's some sort of dissension in the ranks on the defense side.
Like, as in, like, let's get her convicted. Like, she's a horrible client. I mean, obviously, you can't do that, or you shouldn't do that. I mean, you can't. I mean, legally, that would be violating, you know. But in no way would I say you've ever done that, but have you ever seen that happen? Have you ever heard of that happening, where someone just has a client? Let's say Donna Adelson is extremely difficult, because I'm guessing she probably is. Let's say we're going to do it this way. No, I'm going to testify. I'm going to testify. No matter how much you're saying this is not a good idea, Donna, at some point you just have to go, okay, whatever the hell you want, Donna, go for it.
You know, at some point on some particular decisions for trial, you have to defer to the client, even if you think it's the worst decision in the world. And one of those decisions is the right to testify. That's right up there with the right to go to trial as opposed to take any kind of offer. There are a number of critical determinations that are vested in the client only. And the defense attorney can plead at length with these clients to not do these things. And sometimes the clients do it anyway. And I've certainly seen that happen countless times. And you kind of can, you know, read between the lines and see the expression on the defense attorney's face and know that it wasn't their choice.
Let's assume Donna testifies. Let's take a wild guess that it goes horribly, just as good as Charlie's did. So horribly. Does someone like Donna at the end of the day look back to her attorneys and go, I should have listened to you? Or does someone like Donna at the end of the day go, I knocked that out of the park?
You know, I've seen it play out both ways. I've seen folks who are so audacious, so detached from reality, who think they're just untouchable. And, you know, they think something went great while the jury is like, you know, puking in the back based on what the person said. On the other hand, you know, sometimes they do realize after a while that, oh, I made the wrong call here. And this person, you know, went to law school and has a doctorate degree and has been doing this for years. And you know, maybe I should listen to those folks.
Oh, coulda, shoulda, woulda, right, Donna? Oh, listening to people who are wiser than you. But the thing is, with people like Donna, there is no one wiser than Donna, at least I think in Donna's mind. That'd be my conjecture on Donna. But if you are her counsel, if you're sitting there and you know, she's going to testify no matter what, it's her right to, she ain't backing down. You want to win the case at the end of the day. You want to do your job as best as you can for your client. Even, you know, she looks guilty as sin, you're still, that's why we have defense attorneys. What the hell are you telling her? How are you coaching her? How are you preparing her to take that stand, even though this is a horrible, horrible decision?
One thing you need to do is you need to limit the scope of her testimony. You don't want her up there talking about everything under the sun, you know, her background and the family dynamics and everything else. You want her to get up there and get out what she is insisting on getting out in terms of material evidence helpful for the defense, and then shut it down. You know, because what happens is the prosecutor can only ask about things that are within the scope of the defendant's testimony. And so if you keep that scope narrow, you limit the possible exposure, the possible risk during cross-examination.
But there's a lot here that's going to come out. There's a lot that's going to be a part of this case. There's not a lot of limiting that they're going to be able to do at the end of the day, because some of these are just key tenets of the case. I mean, if we're talking about all the checks that she signed being written to Catherine McBonna, the buddy of the hitman, the former girlfriend of her son who's away for murder. How much of the jury or how much of that will the jury get to hear? Will they understand the full context of who Catherine McBonna is? I would think they would, but I know there's sometimes rules and things like that. Well, we can say this, but we can't give that context of it. Where are these lines drawn in a case like this when it comes to cross-examination of Donna Adelson? And where are they not? I mean, how free game are they going to have to go at her? And what do you expect the prosecution to throw at her when they get her on cross?
The judge has a lot of discretion when it comes to evidentiary rules and what is allowed into evidence, what questions can be asked and what questions cannot. There are these rules of evidence that operate as rules, and, you know, some judges see them as guidelines. And then the judge kind of has the discretion to say, hey, I think it's fair to ask about that. You go ahead and ask her. And so I think they're going to ask her, certainly, about the paper trail, about the financial transactions, about what, according to the prosecution, is Donna Adelson cutting these checks from the Adelson business to a murderous co-conspirator who is now in prison for murder. And you know, how is she going to explain that stuff away? What would be the possible explanation for why she was cutting checks to this person from the Adelson business, who didn't work for the Adelson business, but happened to be an intermediary in the murder for hire plot for which she is on trial? How's she going to answer that?
Well, yeah. How are you going to answer that? How is she also going to answer the phone calls, the conversations with Charlie? Because those are big deals. And the language she used in those calls are big deals. It's an us problem. It's not a you problem. It's not a me. It's an us problem. She used that term quite a bit in those conversations. And usually the first call that is made anytime something happened or some event or some information came into Donna about the case, her first call is to Charlie. And then if you look at the phone logs, Charlie's first call is over to Catherine and so forth. I mean, it all connects very, very closely. And the fact that she also openly, I don't want to say made admissions, because she didn't technically make admissions in the calls, but there was a lot of hinting. There was a lot of code words, I mean, which are pretty poor code words. All of that's going to be played for a jury. And again, Donna's going to have to try and answer for all of this on the stand. If she just sat there and shut up and didn't go on the stand, she wouldn't have to, in herself, verbally go, what's up with that? But now she's going to, if she's going to take the stand. How is she going to explain these things?
You know, if I am her defense counsel, the way that I would approach it is essentially characterizing it as, you know, someone who is a protected and perhaps, or protective and perhaps over-involved mother is not necessarily the same person who is involved in a murder for hire plot. You know, I think they're going to have to style it as, hey, she was being attentive to her son and also to this sort of family dispute that was going on with Wendy Adelson. And, you know, simply wanting to protect the son and being involved in the conversations, being apprised of what's going on, isn't necessarily the same as enlisting someone to kill somebody else. I think that's the horse they're going to have to ride. We'll see if the jury buys it.
That she's just completely aloof, basically. Donna's just aloof. You also have...
Yeah, and protective as a mother. And yeah.
How do you think the jury's going to take the Vietnam getaway? I know some of the verbiage that she said on this. Well, me and Harvey went there a long time ago, which I don't even know if that's true, if she went there a long time ago, but she claims that they did. I'm sure that could be found out. And we just wanted to go and get away because it was so much stress. And it's if you just take a step back and not go, you're clearly guilty, Donna. If you just take a step back and go, well, shit, like if I found out my son had conspired to kill the ex-husband of his sister to make me happy so the kids could come live with us, but I had nothing to do with this, that would be very frustrating because everybody's going to be looking at you like you had something to do with it. It would be a headache. It would be more than a headache. It'd be hell. I could see wanting to get out of Dodge and wanting to go somewhere far away where I'm not going to be recognized just for my own sanity. So on that argument, I mean, it doesn't seem that crazy, but the fact that it's a one-way ticket, that's like, you should have just got a return flight. Never got on the flight, but then at least it looks like it's a vacation. Because right now it just looks like you're fleeing the country. Is that an oversight on Donna's part?
Oh, absolutely. And I think there is some traction to the possible explanation that, hey, she was just so overwhelmed with this horrible family drama. She needed a breather and, gosh, let's go to a country far away and try to forget about this. But yeah, the one-way ticket isn't great. The fact that Vietnam is a country that doesn't extradite to the U.S. typically isn't great. You know, most countries do. And so the country she picked, the fact that it's a one-way ticket, the timing of her attempt to skedaddle is really going to, according to the prosecution, show consciousness of guilt. And what consciousness of guilt do you have if you were just being a protective mother who had no involvement in the murder for hire plot?
Poor Donna. She's so misunderstood. She's so prosecuted. She's just trying to skedaddle away, and they had to interrupt her trip. Yeah. Let's talk about the prosecution of Donna Adelson, now that we've kind of gone through her defense strategies here, which don't seem to be great. As a prosecutor, is this an easy one? Is this an easy one to go after because there's a lot of stuff here? Or what sort of strategy would you employ going at Donna? It's not Charlie. It's Donna this round. What would you be introducing here as you bring in opening statements?
You know, I don't think it is an overwhelmingly strong case. I think there is a good amount of circumstantial evidence. There's a good amount of reasonable inferences that one can draw from, like you said, the jail calls, the verbiage used, that kind of thing. I think you look at the hard evidence you have, which are these payments. That is just inexplicable. I haven't heard any innocent explanation for why Donna Adelson would pay from the family business this intermediary in a murder-for-hire plot. And then you also look at her motivation. She was very involved in this custody dispute there was actually a motion filed against her in the custody dispute regarding her ability to have unsupervised visitation with the grandchildren. You know, so she had a motive. She had a reason. It's not just, someone who's incidentally, connected in that way. And so you look at motive, you look at the financial transactions that are really hard to explain. You couple that with the jail calls although they use coded language, you know, she talks about like using a TV as code word, perhaps, for some nefarious activity. You look at how many times she uses TV in those jail calls. You connect the dots for the jury and you say, hey, here, this is enough. You guys get it.
I want to talk about another piece of evidence here that we haven't touched on yet. And it's not, it's not a murder weapon. It's not a check written to a killer's friend. It's none of that. It's a bribe that she attempted to throw out there. $1 million. And the whole family was going to pool together their cash and get $1 million and offer it. They did offer it to Dan Markell. Hey, you let the kids move down here, we're going to give you $1 million, for your time and inconvenience, which, asking someone to abandon their children, essentially, or it can be looked at as, look, we know this is not something you want to do. Here's $1 million. Maybe you move down here too. It can look very nefarious. It can look very reasonable or generous even in some ways of, we know this is a horrible inconvenience. This sucks. Not everybody's going to offer $1 million in a custody dispute to have the other parent give up rights. Most people don't have the means to do something like that. How do you think that's going to play to the jury? Because I could see it being spun, both ways with variable success.
Oh, sure. I think there are multiple interpretations of it. You know, I think the prosecution will likely be able to strongly argue how invested Donna Adelson was in this entire dispute, the lengths to which she would be willing to go, $1 million, that's a ton of money to just try to resolve some kind of family law case. So she is in this matters to her. And if she's willing to go to that length, are there other extreme lengths to which she's willing to go in order to get the outcome she wants? And then, lo and behold, Dan Markell is killed. And now she does have the outcome she wants temporarily. And so, you can kind of connect the dots between those states of affairs.
How damning is it that Charlie was convicted? We're going into this. Obviously, this Charlie was the first one that went down, other than the hitman and McBonough. So actually, Charlie wasn't the first one. The first of the Adelsons to go down. So you already had the two dominoes that fell. Then Charlie fell. This is the next one in the line of dominoes, really. When you have three people who are now already incarcerated for this murder, is it easier then to pull a fourth person in to show, see, this is obviously already going on? This seems to make a lot of sense. It's not a single case on its own where you have to show that all of these things were in motion. That's already been proven.
There is certainly a sort of guilt by association type of feel to it. You know, you're so close with these other people who are convicted in this murder for hire plot, and your involvement seems significant. On the other hand, I think it gives the defense a possible argument that they can make to this jury, like, hey, look, you guys have your pound of flesh. There are four people in prison for decades for this, and those are the four people who are most involved. You know, did this grandma get caught up in some form or fashion in an unfortunate circumstance with this custody battle and this tragedy that happened, perhaps. But I think they're going to style her as kind of a sympathetic old lady, or try to, and say that, hey, you guys have your pound of flesh. You don't need another, you know, 70-year-old in a box for the rest of her life.
Do you think we're going to see a different Donna Adelson at the trial than we've seen in these pretrial hearings? The one that's whining about, you know, not having a thick enough mattress and chill, and, oh my gosh, my earwax is piling up and I can't hear. What? Are we going to see that Donna, or are we going to see frail Donna, confused Donna? Maybe Donna in a wheelchair. That would be a neat little touch. That I think would, if you're the defense attorney, I think I might be going down that road. Or is that just kind of, you know, playing it up a little too much?
You don't want to overdo it. And you want to be truthful, of course, about what you're presenting. But that being said, I think we might see kind of a Robert Durst approach here. Robert Durst was on trial for murder, and he was in age, and he, you know, had a catheter in and in a wheelchair, could barely move, could barely talk. And I wouldn't be surprised if that is how Adelson presents while she is in court.
What if they tried to make her look like Robert Durst? Like, literally tried to make her look like it was Halloween. Donna Adelson is Robert Durst for Halloween. Help her,
already
Donna.
A scary trial, not, yeah.
Do you think, is Donna the last of the dominoes to fall here? After this thing is done, is Harvey going to get hit? Is Wendy going to get hit? Or have they reached their conclusion?
You know, my apprehension was that they would have tried to rope in these folks earlier, including Donna. I'm surprised that she sort of is facing this at this stage. I thought they would try to bundle these things together. Wendy, to my knowledge, has not been charged. Harvey has not been charged, although he was going on the Vietnam trip for one-way ticket to a non-extraditable country. So that's suspicious. That being said, haven't heard charges against them. You know, what could evidence at this trial change the game and result in more folks being implicated? It could.
So what I'm wondering is, every single trial, the more discovery that's made, the more they're like, oh, look what we have here. But we can't necessarily charge you yet, because we don't want this to come out into the public until this happens. And it's just a pick them off, pick them off, pick them off. I don't know. The world will see in the coming months. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, as always, thank you so much for your insight in this and the many cases that we are covering right here.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice, and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.